Welcome back to another episode of The Art of Healing. I'm your host and therapist friend, Trevor Hansen, and I'm incredibly excited to bring to you today a bit of a different episode. See, we've talked a lot about attachment and relationships on this show, but something that we haven't dove as much into is regulating our nervous system from a body-centered approach. Because there's kind of this idea that says we can regulate the way we feel from the top down, meaning we're thinking different things, we're changing our cognitions, and that's going to change how we feel. That works really well. That's in line with cognitive behavioral therapy. But another approach is the bottom up, regulating our body, utilizing our knowledge of the nervous system and the body to help calm down in the face of trauma-related triggers or just feeling anxious because of whatever given situation we find ourselves in. And I have the perfect guest to help me with that. I have Morgan Starr Reistis, and she is an amazing person. She provides a lot of really helpful and really understandable and applicable knowledge on how to regulate the nervous system online to her over 100,000 followers now on Instagram and other places as well. And Morgan today shares with me some knowledge that I was actually pretty blown away by, some things I had never known about trauma, about the nervous system, and how animals cope through trauma and how they overcome those anxious moments. And maybe we can draw from those and learn a little bit ourselves. So I'm not going to give it all away, but it is an incredible episode. I'm excited for you to listen to this. If you're here and you're in a position where you're hoping to change the nature of your relationship, maybe you and your partner are conflicting frequently. Maybe you're having fights and you want to slow down, stop the fights, increase connection, stop living like roommates, and start actually connecting with one another in a meaningful and a vulnerable way, I have a resource for you. The Connection Course is now live. The link is in the description of this podcast, as well as in the bio on all of my social medias. You can find it there, but you can find the Connection Course. And what this does is it will guide you through gaining a greater awareness of your own triggers, within your relationship, your own emotions within your relationship. Also help you gain a better understanding of what your partner might be experiencing on a deeper level. And the deeper level is what drives our disconnection. If you've listened to this podcast, you've probably started to figure that out, that what we see on the surface is usually only a very small piece of the story. But once we have a deeper understanding, we can then begin to apply that understanding. And that's the second part of the course. It's to help you to apply that understanding, a deeper understanding of yourself, of your partner, and the relationship between the two of you, and utilize communication skills to help you to get out of negative patterns and start connecting and stop the fighting, decrease the fighting. So if you haven't checked it out, go and check that out. That's the Connection Course. But without further ado, we're going to jump into this interview with Morgan. Just as a reminder, the Art of Healing podcast and the Connection Course are not therapy. They're not a substitute for therapy, but should be considered as additional mental health resources as you work through your own healing journey and seek to improve your relationships. Morgan, it's really fun to have you on the podcast today.
Yeah, it's fun to be here. I like connecting with other therapists.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's fun. Right before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about like how you wind up finding other therapists online. You kind of like watch them for a minute and then you wind up like meeting them like here on podcasts. And it's cool because like I think that's one of the hardest parts about social media is that you feel like I know I have like all these people that happen to watch my stuff and they like it, but I never know any of them. Like I don't meet any of them. Like a couple of them are my clients, but sure. But like, yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a weird disconnected feeling. So it's super fun to actually like meet another person in the flesh.
Yeah. Sometimes it does feel like posting into the void. And yeah. I'm so thankful whenever people actually reach out and bridge that gap a little bit, because sometimes it is like, here you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, okay, cool. That got like, you know, like 20,000 people to like it. And so apparently there's 20,000 people who like enjoyed it enough.
Oh my gosh. Sometimes that's so mind blowing to think about how many people are, you know, try to fit 100,000 people into a room. That blows my mind.
Yeah. It's really weird. And the crazy thing is like, okay, yeah, that number's there, but like, who are they? Like,
everyone has a story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then trying to give advice to all of those people is really hard.
So hard.
Really
Yeah, I get
hard.
like really self-conscious about it sometimes where I'm like, I like want to put a big disclaimer on everything that I do. Like, this is not necessarily for you. Like, this is not universal. Like, whatever,
You
whatever.
cannot blanket statement everything. Yes.
Yeah, no,
There are so
luckily,
many nuances in therapy, and I think that that is the benefit of having working with someone one-on-one or, within a group setting, because there really can be that nuance and skill set that comes in. I mean, this is just such a scratching of the surface. It's like a sample of like,
Yeah.
here's my brain and how I look at stuff. And it's a, there's so many different fits too. I think that that's the beauty of sort of shopping for a therapist in some ways, is that not everyone's going to jive with, different brains. And I am of the belief a little bit that, one of the downsides in westernized therapy paradigms is that we treat therapists as the experts. I think it's a little misguided to think that we have the answers for someone else's perspective. I think it's a
Yeah.
little, egoic, or maybe there's a desire for people to have the answers. And so it's easy for us to be like, okay, cool, we have them. But I personally think that a lot of my job as a therapist is leading people back to their own wisdom and their
Yeah.
own internal guidance. So a lot of what I do is just ask people questions in a more like therapeutic sense. Whenever we're actually there, it's like, I'm just a guide to help you find your own answers. And so that's a weird, contrast to my work that I do on Instagram and on social media and stuff, because I don't have that other person to really dive into and explore, right? So.
Yeah, and that's really challenging because there are so many nuanced pieces to a person's life, and I kind of wrestle with that paradigm as well in certain aspects, and in certain aspects I'm like, okay, what are the benefits of like having a quote like expert in the room, and what does that actually look like? And I think for me it looks like, okay, maybe I know, maybe it's just 1% more about like human interaction and patterns and things that can be helpful. And if I have that 1% and I can maybe ask questions to guide you towards that wisdom, which is probably already inherently built into you quite a bit, I kind of like that approach where it's like, okay, maybe I do know like a smidge more because I mean I did go to school for like a reason, but to think I have the answer for your life, definitely an uncomfortable idea. And it's so funny. Sometimes people will come to me and they're like, "So what do we like? All right, tell me what we're gonna do today." Like, and I'm like, "No. You tell me what we're gonna do today. Like this is your life. Like what? Like I'm here for the content." And it's kind of fun. Like that can in itself be therapeutic, where I'm like holding them accountable for like bringing change in their own lives.
Right, because a lot of people do maybe come into therapy or these helping containers and think that we're just going to do the work for them. And I think that that's a
Yeah.
big, misunderstanding in maybe or misleading whenever there's sort of these gurus on Instagram and things that it's like, here's some answers. It's like, it doesn't happen for you. It's not an
Right.
intellectual thing a lot of the times too, and that's a lot of my work, is that we got to bring it into the body, we got to bring it into the nervous system, and we've
Totally.
got to enact it in our life and our family systems and our internal family systems, right? There's so many ways that we need to integrate a lot of the things that we hear in these like minute-long videos, that's why the process is so important to be within a therapeutic container or a group session or something that's, helping evolve that process beyond just facts and like books and podcasts. I mean, I think this is beautiful, and how can
Right.
you apply it into your life? Because information is information, and it doesn't turn into actual sustainable change until we make movements with that and kind of flow with it in our own ways, with applying it with our own answers.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is that like logical pieces, putting the puzzle together like from a thought experiment can only take you so far. But when you apply that thought experiment, you take those logical pieces, maybe a new reframe into your life, or you're approaching something in a different way, the experience of actually living that change is what creates like lasting and deep and meaningful change. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yeah, definitely. And it's sort of that difference of top-down processing versus bottom-up and kind of having a combination of both. And for those that don't really know about that, you know, top-down is sort of like the cognitive ideas and then bringing it down into the body. I think that this is really helpful in like, you know, helping to heal trauma because we can think differently about stuff. And then we can bring that into the body whenever the body starts having more biological responses of like, we're not safe or, you know, and then vice versa, we've got the bottom up processing where the body says, we're not safe, we're not safe. And then we have to kind of go, there's both sides of it that really need to be applied. And I feel like a lot of the times we're stuck in this information era where it's only top down versus like nervous system regulating from the bottom up. And then our thoughts can catch up. Does that make sense?
Totally. It makes sense. Yeah. I see that all the time where, so I work a lot with couples and I do emotionally focused therapy. There's a lot of what we call enactments. And for those who are listening who don't know an enactment is where like the therapist will ask you basically to actually implement it into your life, like right then and there, meaning you're turning into your spouse and you're actually sharing your fear for the first time about like them leaving you or you're sharing how deeply you long for them and you like, you know, miss them when they're withdrawn or whatever it is. And they have the idea of like, oh, that would be a good idea. Yeah, we ought to do that. But until they actually experience it in the room, and it's so different. It's funny. They'll say the exact same words to me. And I'm like, we say the exact same thing, but to him or to her or whoever. And, they're like, well, I just said it to you. Like, I don't need to say it again. I'm like, say it again, man. Like turn and say it because it's just way more powerful. And that emotional experience creates that underlying sense of safety and like security. So in the future, their body in the same similar situation with that same partner has a bit more kind of inkling to say, oh, this is a safe environment. This is that same person who I felt so comfortable with, like, you know, a few days ago, or it could be a few years ago. These can be really impactful experiences.
Yeah. And there's such resistance to change. I mean, you see these ideas, it's like, oh my gosh, that's a great idea. And then there's this in-between time of how do we act on it? How do we make that behavioral change? And sometimes that does look like saying the thing when it's really uncomfortable. I'm curious about your thoughts on that. Like why are we so resistant to change? I think this is such an interesting topic around humanity because I mean, change is to me, one of the only constants that there is in the universe and humans do not like it. We like stability. So I'm just curious on what your thoughts are and like,
Well, you know, it's funny. I've been pondering a lot on the idea of motivation behind change and what really facilitates change. And I'm kind of the experiential therapist kind of line of thought. Doesn't mean that I don't use other things that are more cognitive, like cognitive behavioral therapy or whatever, because I mean, it's got some great science behind it. It works. However, it makes me think about, so when we experience something like anything, but I think we'll take trauma as like the classic example. People have gotten pretty familiar with the process of like, oh, I experienced a traumatic event. In the future, I may have resistance around similar stimuli and similar situations. I may feel unsafe or I may have, you know, limiting beliefs about that particular topic or situation or whatever. And I think that's natural, like it's the body's protection. So like we're, I think part of the reason why we fight change is that like from an, I don't know, from like a neurological standpoint, it's pretty comfortable to do the same thing. We literally create neural pathways that teach us how to do that same thing over and over. It gets easier to play the guitar over and over because there's a new neural pathway and it becomes comfortable to make those same moves. And it makes me think, I've been kind of like stewing on this a whole lot, is that by the same mechanisms that like this trauma, this negative kind of repercussion in your life is created, those same mechanisms, a positive, I don't know if you would call it positive trauma or if there's like a real word for this, but like a positive pathway can also be formed. Like, okay, maybe I wasn't, you know, maybe I had a really bad accident with the toaster. I don't know, I made toast this morning. And so I don't want to go near toasters. But what if like I had a really, really good experience in the kitchen later, or like there was some sort of positive association with that that kind of rewrote some of those pathways. And I feel like that's what we do with experiential therapy, where people like actually enact things, they go and they try it, they create a new emotional experience around it, which forms new, and again, I'm almost talking hypothetically and someone may have science to back me up, but I feel like it forms new neural pathways that says, this stimulus is okay, this is safe. I don't have the case studies to cite this, but yeah. So
I've heard it called corrective experiences. That's sort of what you know what I mean? So it's like, I think personally, that's why we keep repeating trauma cycles is, you know, whether you're talking about just from a neurobiological perspective, like your nervous system is recreating similar stimulus, or we're recreating environments to repeat those things so that we can have a corrective experience from that. And I think that's where a lot of exposure therapy comes in, or, you know, like if you've had a bad experience with a toaster, like how do we, you know, continue to make toast and know that, okay, that time was not healthy and safe, but this, the rest of the times are. But it it's so nuanced. So
I love that idea. That's like maybe you know, the body does protect itself with those traumatic responses, but at the same time, maybe you also seek out similar environments because there's a part of us that knows we need a corrective experience. Like I need something different to rewrite this, and so maybe that's why we seek out, you know, the same kind of partners that don't treat us right or whatnot.
No, I think that there's something to that. And, you know, while I want to say just never choose those people, I think there is a process that we learn about self-worth if we're in an abusive relationship, or what is it like to reclaim our power. And, you know, if that's been our experience as we continue to bring into our life that same thing that we know, how do we evolve and grow beyond that container? Because and there's just some change process that happens, and you know, I think that this is the beauty of therapy, is that we can talk about that and start facing those and start creating your own corrective experiences versus sort of going on autopilot and just waiting for something to happen. That is sort of that shift out of that victim role and into a creator role into your life.
With that in mind, I can't help but think of, like, you know, if somebody is in, let's say, an abusive relationship, and they've been in a lot of them, and this time around, you know, most of the time they just stay in kind of that victim role, like, oh, why does this always happen to me? And like, this is the worst. I can't believe I'm here again. You can stay there, and most likely you will probably get back there again. But I think there's like, there's a choice to be made that says finding, I think this is where we kind of get into maybe some existentialism and some Viktor Frankl kind of thinking, where it's like finding purpose in that suffering by utilizing it as, hey, this is a great exposure, this is a great opportunity to make some changes and to find some healing. I have a client right now that has struggled with self-worth forever, for the longest time, self-image, all that. And her husband recently came out with like a 10 plus year pornography addiction that just blindsided her. And, you know, you would think that that would be the ultimate, you know, crushing final blow to self-worth. And it, for a moment, it did feel like that. But it's so cool. Recently in a session, she was just like, I feel like this is the thing that I needed to like push me over the edge to actually explore like me and like my value and what, like, I have a voice and I deserve to have a voice in this relationship and bring it to the table and and whatnot. And it's like, wow. So the thing that gave you a bunch of self-worth was the experience around a 10-year pornography addiction coming out. Seems backwards, but she took it as an opportunity to repair rather than an opportunity to just deepen this mindset of, I'm not enough.
Yeah. It's so nuanced and beautiful when that happens. You know, it's one of those things, it's like, what primes someone's brain to make that choice? And how long does it take to do that? Like, there's no cookie cutter answer. You know, I wish that there was, that would make our jobs a lot easier. I think if there was some sort of direct formula of like, here's how you choose in those moments to make that empowering and enable change versus not, you know. But that's a beautiful story. I love hearing some of those shifts, because that really is like those mindset differences really change our realities in a lot of ways and change our relationships and how we, you know, move through the world. And it can really just.
It seems like sometimes, and not that I wish like difficult things on people. Well, I don't know. In a way, maybe I do. Cause like, I think about my difficult experiences, like I'm so grateful for them. Mm-hmm. Like I did a video recently about like the analogy of this red button. Like in my hardest moments of life, I remember like wishing, I was like, I just wish I had a red button. Like I could hit it at reverse time and just do everything different and like avoid all of this garbage. But now like after living through the experience, after like choosing to make it corrective and healing and whatnot, like, dude, I would defend that button to the death. Like I wouldn't let anybody touch it. And it's interesting how sometimes the hardest experiences are the things that you need. Another couple of mine, an affair. They've been so disconnected for such a long time, haven't figured it out. Even in therapy, we're kind of spinning our wheels. I'm like, we're missing something here. Like, what's going on? Finally, disclose the affair. You would think that that'd be the most tragic thing on the earth. For them, it was a catalyst to change. Wow, we're finally talking about things openly. We're actually making progress and healing. And so it's like, man, there's kind of some, and not to be all Pollyanna-like and just silver lining all your problems and dismiss them, but I don't know, there's kind of this purpose in suffering, and I think that's beautiful.
Yeah, it reminds me of the book, The Giver. You know, his job within that community was to, you know, hold that pain, and there's value in that. And, you know, I agree. I think back to my, you know, most defining moments in my life, and some of them are really down. They were not necessarily things that, you know, I've learned so much about myself, of what it's like to be able to hold myself in those places, to offer myself compassion and love in those places. They're defining moments. And I like this analogy of, you know, going underwater and the pearls are at the bottom, but you have to kind of go through the darkness at times to, you know, in deep dive, and there's pressure and it's hard and, you know, it's not comfortable. But that's where the pearls are sometimes. And I really do think that sometimes our gifts are in really hard to open packaging. And whenever we choose to face them, I really liked somebody out there, Dr. Julie. She had really just been loving this analogy lately, and I've been using it. And it's fun to see creators sort of on the same wavelength. Like, whoa, nice. I use that analogy too, of like the Chinese finger trap.
Oh, yeah.
Of, you know, it's like sometimes whenever these difficult things show up, hard emotions, you know, whatever it is that we're not telling our partner or whatever it is, and we resist. And that creates a lot more symptoms of discomfort than if we were to actually lean into it and like, what is here? What am I being taught? And, you know, I think that I go maybe on a little bit more of the spiritual side than some therapists. But I think, you know, I kind of think about these as like universal flashcards. Like if the universe is like showing a flashcard to you, like kind of like you're studying for a test, it's like, do you know this information yet? What about this? What about this? And it kind of like shows up those new relationships or scenarios that you're repeating over and over. And it's like, do I know this yet? Do I know my self-worth? Do I know how to lean into these challenging situations? And not necessarily, I like what you're saying, like not to completely make a silver lining around everything, because stuff is hard. It's not fun. Like there are things that, you know, get out of it, like get out of the abusive relationship or whatever it is. Right. And there's situations where we can take those and learn from them, build a foundation upon them, and create those corrective experiences for ourselves. Those are some analogies out there.
I love those analogies. That's awesome. I it's funny. People love analogies. I feel like people gravitate. It's funny. You can start to figure out like what people enjoy listening to when you're creating enough videos and you're like watching how they do. People love analogies.
Oh yeah.
Like goodness, they just cling
on
to
them. They're sticky. They're helpful. They're something that you can apply in your everyday life, I think. And you know, humans have evolved over time to have story and like this is like this. You know, I think that there's something in our brains that clicks somehow. You know, there's archetypes that mean a lot more than what sort of a couple of words can say. And I think that analogies can really pack a larger story into a very short period of time. I think that's really helpful in today's information whirl, where you're just, your attention is going left and right. I think these analogies can be sticky, and then you think about, oh, that pearl. Yeah, there's, this is a gift and hard to open packaging. Okay, like that sticks maybe better than this whole book you read, or your brain somehow holds on to it a little bit differently.
I think maybe it leans into what we were talking about earlier, the difference between emotional experience versus logical processing. Because, in a vividly imagined experience is very, very similar for your brain and body as an actual experience, really similar. And so if we have a story and we can envision that, I'm imagining myself swimming down to the bottom, my ears, like I'm just trying to, pressurize. It's getting pretty hard. My lungs are feeling that pressure. It's dark and I'm grabbing those pearls, like I'm imagining it. And even just describing it, that's exciting. It's an emotional experience. It's something that's changing. And maybe that's why there's power in story, is because we envision ourselves there. It creates emotional experiences which move us to make a change. I don't know.
Yeah, there's something to the experience of it versus, just this logical, like, okay, cool. I mean, our brains are trying to save energy all of the time. I think it's so interesting that our brains take up like 80% of our energy on a daily basis. Our brains have evolved to be very large for our body structure, and there's a whole tangent. My educational background, I got a bachelor's degree in cognitive neuroscience and minors in wellness and human biology. So a lot of
That's
my like
awesome.
background is very in just learning how the brain evolved and things like that. And it's really interesting to see because there's huge gaps in like how did our brain evolve to be like have this big of a prefrontal cortex in this short of a time? Like it's very like whoa. And a lot of people have hypotheses around different things, and one of them is that we had food is metabolized outside of our body with the use of fire, and so the energy broke down in a different way than if we were to completely have like raw food all the time. And so there's just anyway, I can nerd out about that all day, but that's not really my point. My point is more that our energy is trying to be saved, and so that's why we create neural highways. That's why we have shortcuts and heuristics for our brain to just kind of fall back on. Because if we are thinking all the time about having our heartbeat or how to walk or just all of these things that we evolved to have super highways over, like we don't have to think about that. And so our brain is just saving energy all the time because it already takes up so much energy that we can't think about everything. And so anyway, that's some of my passions is, how to create new neural ha pathways and how to help prune away ones that we're not using. So I think that's the process of change in a lot of ways when we're doing it consciously, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you feel like with your background, so heavily focused on some of these like neuroscience areas and whatnot, as being a therapist, how does that impact the way you approach therapy and maybe the things that you do with your clients? Because I'm over here thinking I want to implement more of the biological understanding of the body and how it affects, mood and sleep and wakefulness and motivation and all that. And I've been listening to quite a bit of that information. I find it fascinating, so helpful for my clients. But is how do you feel like your understanding of neuroscience impacts the way you do therapy?
It's a great question. Well, one of the reasons why I got into therapy in the first place is that I felt like it was learning the vehicle that we're driving on this planet. It sort of felt like, what is going on here? Like, I have this consciousness and it's somehow moving this body around, and I've got thoughts and I can witness those thoughts. Like, what is this about? And so some of that was seeking answers in what westernized psychology could offer. And it's a beautiful time to be alive in the world of psychology because a lot of neuroimaging and a lot of the work that was done in the 90s around just some of these things we did not have access to before. So I think that it's really exciting to learn about neuroplasticity and know that your brain can change and that it's not this static place because, previous to the 90s, that's what everybody thought. You were stuck. that's it. You know, so this is a really exciting time in some ways to have the science back up of, we actually do create new neural pathways throughout our life, and we're also pruning away some. So, you know, I think that there's a real, I don't know how to describe it, but there's an amazement to me that we're all just functioning. We're a bunch of water functioning with electrical impulses happening. And there's like, somehow this is all working together to the fact that we're communicating right now. I think that I have a deeper level of awe that this is even happening in the first place. But how that affects, you know, me and my clients, my master's degree was in clinical mental health with emphasis in somatic therapies. So a lot of the work that I do is helping bring some of those, you know, not just seeing the brain as something that's sitting up in our heads, but of us as a being is an entire nervous system, and helping us recognize, I think that these are some of the evolutions that are happening in therapy, is that it's not just psychotherapy, it's full being therapy. And I think that that's some of the work that I really strive to do, is how we can create holistic frameworks for us to work through, that's including our nervous system, that's not just thoughts, that's not just up in our head. Because like you're saying, there is, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy is super backed by science, and there is a lot of effectiveness in that, but that's not the full picture. And so I think a lot of the ways that I've been trained about the brain and about how this is affecting your entire nervous system and how it's connected, and all of these intricate, beautiful ways, I think really changes my approach to see the full being versus just a brain that sits up in the head. And that's what we're working with, if that makes sense.
So what does that look like in therapy? So you say like whole body therapy. Someone listening to me might be like, wait, what do you do? Like, what does that look like if someone were to experience? I do some somatic work as well, but I'm curious for those who are listening who don't understand what somatic even means, or body, like full body therapy. What do you say in there?
Well, if you're interested in looking into more details, I think people like Peter Levine are really excellent resources to go into. He does a lot of work around how trauma is actually stored in the body and how we can release some of those through shaking. You know, if you look at, you know, say a tiger was chasing an antelope, in nature, our nervous systems shut down as a form of protection. And sometimes that is a way that we also feel that in our own systems. And then we like hold on to that. And a lot of the times there's a natural process afterwards, say the antelope got away, the antelope would then shake. And you can see videos of this, that this is a natural process that your nervous system lets go, says, oh, we're safe again. And we can kind of go back to normal functioning. But a lot of the times there's a missing link somewhere along the lines, whether it's chronic trauma that's happening over and over again, and we never actually get that release because we're not safe. You know, we think it's weird socially to shake and move in the ways that our body needs to. Some of the really, really interesting case studies that Peter Levine has, you know, set out is, you know, in one of his books, I think it was Waking the Tiger Within or something like that. He talks about, you know, say there's someone that's survived a sexual assault. Maybe their knee like bops up and down all the time. And like, maybe that's, they've just kind of attributed, like, that's just what happens to me now. I'm just anxious. And he's explored with his clients, what happens if we accentuate that movement? What if we go into that movement in a way that allows you to release whatever your body is trying? And that's like corrective experience we're talking about, right? Is like, what way can your body recognize now that you're safe, that you can run away, right? Because sometimes we're seeing that your body wants to run, right? There's that bobbing knee up and down, you know, you can imagine it in your chair like that
kind of. I'm over here doing it right now.
And so when we accentuate that, maybe it turns into a run, maybe it turns into my legs really needed to move and get out of there in that situation. And so he's finding that when we can retroactively go back, help our nervous system reorient to our present time, date, and space, and maybe offer some movement to that, and allow your body's process to really follow through, that it helps to unbind some of the psychological associations that we've had. And that's more of a bottom-up approach, as we were talking about earlier. Because a lot of top-down is like, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, things like that, of like we're helping the thoughts go into the body, but it's more of, you know, the somatic therapies are helping regulate your nervous system from the bottom up, so that your thoughts can kind of catch up. And I think that's sometimes a missing piece in healing from trauma, is that we're not including the body. And we're like, why isn't this moving? Why isn't, like, I know cognitively that things are different, but your body doesn't know. And so your nervous system still needs to have that release. So that's some of some of the approaches. Yeah.
That sounds so cool. I didn't know about that work and like accentuating and like shaking. It's so funny. The phrase, like, you know, shake it off might have a little bit more.
It's deep.
It might have a little more meaning to it than we realize.
Yeah. And so there's a type of therapy out there, TRE, like I think it's called a trauma release experience or something. Sorry, I don't know it off the top of my head, but yeah. I just know it as TRE. And it's a form of shaking. Like they have, that is a type of therapy that they hold you in a container, you know, where it's safe to shake, and they kind of move you through the process of that. So I don't necessarily do that myself, but I just know that that's a resource that's out there for people that are really interested in somatic therapies.
Interesting. Is it like you're shaking your own body, or something externally is shaking you?
Yeah, you're shaking your own body.
Okay, that's what I would think.
Yeah.
It's funny because I, you know, I'll even watch like my little dog, and like when he, you know, he's like a little nervous or something's going on, like afterwards, he'll do his little shake. Like he's got like water on his back, but he's dry as can be, and he'll just literally shake it off and keep rolling. And I'm like, huh.
Yeah, it's a natural process. And, you know, I think that we have socially conditioned ourselves to think that it's weird, or, you know, it's not socially acceptable after an experience like that to maybe we've just kind of stepped out of our body's natural healing intelligence and sort of replaced it with that's not cool or somebody's going to judge me for that.
I wonder if,
of course, most people don't know that that's something that they need to do.
Totally. And it makes me wonder, I was learning a little bit about the expression of epinephrine or adrenaline in the body, and how a lot of animals, when, you know, they're heightened, they're literally undulate. They'll kind of do like a back and forth. They're doing a motion. Might not be like a full on shaking, but there is like a physical manifestation of that, like high levels of that particular hormone in the body. And it makes me almost wondering if like there's a link between, you know, being able to like kind of shake, or I don't know if it has anything to do with like utilizing
the very regulating, you know. But I hear what you're saying. There are intricate combinations of hormones and all of these very old biological, evolutionarily important things that are still happening, but we now have these really big prefrontal cortexes that can kind of shut some of those things down. We can overthink, we can make it so that these things don't feel as important to us, or we can just completely get hijacked by those too, which I think often happens in like PTSD and some of these things, is that our bodies talk more than I think I had read something in my studies a while ago, that your body actually has a ratio of communicating 30 messages per every one message that your brain communicates down to your body. Hmm. So your body's actually talking to your brain 30 to 1 ratio,
wow.
which I thought was a really interesting. I hope that there's a fact checker out there that can make sure that that's what I had read at one point, but it's a really high ratio, you know, that there's so much happening that the brain can't filter through, you know. It's like, there's too much information here. I need to go on autopilot.
Or like the things like, you know, social acceptability or just cultural norms of like, okay, you know, it sends maybe the body would naturally want to do something like, you know, shake it off after like a stressful experience or whatnot. But that, like you said, that prefrontal cortex, being that it's much larger than it has been before, has a lot of reasoning and thought power to grab onto things like culture and all that and say like, nope, we're not doing that.
Yep.
And it makes me wonder, I would love to see studies about like, neuromodulators are like these hormones, for those who are listening, like things that basically interact with our nervous system, chemicals. The different levels of those in the body, the brain and body, like pre and post shake after some sort of like experience like this. Because I wonder if like if it's part of like, okay, I got like a little excess adrenaline or epinephrine, like a natural undulation of the body makes sense, like let's accentuate it and maybe it like clears it out. I don't know. Yeah. I'm just kind of nerding out thinking about like,
I think that there are things out there, and you know, really? I think that I'm pretty sure that there are already there is research around things like that.
Sounds like I need to do some research.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, how did you become a therapist? I always love this question. Like, where'd you grow up? What led you to be where you're at?
That's a big question. I think that I might be an anomaly that I've always known.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's always, people have always been attracted to asking me for advice, and just like, I've just always been that listening ear that has the questions, and I did naturally fall into it. However, and this is one of those things you were talking about, sort of those times in life that are really challenging that you would protect that button for. And I actually, whenever I first started school, right out of high school at 18, I went to go actually have a marketing degree. I thought, nobody can make any money in psychology. Like in my mind, I was focused on money. Like I didn't really, and I was 18, you know, what do you want to do? I don't know. I'll combine art and psychology. That's marketing. So I went and, you know, went and studied that for a first year. And I actually had a pretty beautiful experience, you know, that actually got me into psychedelic assisted therapy, that I was in a very low in my life, felt really depressed. I wasn't aligned with my purpose and in marketing, you know, and had a really life-changing experience, very positive, but challenging, right? To really be like, you're not in where you need to be. And it was this realignment experience of, here's your life purpose. You know it. What is it going to take to go do that? And I've, since that point, when I was 19, have known that my purpose is really to help evolve consciousness, whether that's just within myself, but also on the planet. And I knew that that was going to be within psychology, that I was a bridge between some more of the spirit and science world, that that really drove some of my education to really up on the science side of it, because I had had such a spiritual deep experience, that led me to some of the psychedelic assisted therapy work that I do now. And that's a whole topic, but either way, I did end up going and getting my undergrad at the University of Denver, and shifted like all of my life, you know, whole new friends, whole new, you know, just changed everything, because I knew that that's what I needed to do, was just pursue psychology and learning about, like I said, this vehicle. And then, you know, as things continued to progress, I whenever I graduated from DU, I moved to Hawaii, and I started working at a horticulture therapy program out there. And I just fell in love with how nature can be paired with therapy. And there's just this healing element there. And just fell in love with the Hawaiian culture and the Aina there. And just, there's a whole process with that. And I was out there for the last 7 years. So actually just moved back to the mainland and started my private practice last year. So yeah, you know, and there's grad school all in there. And so eventually, as I learned more and more about being in these more residential treatment centers, I had a process of, you know, working also in Alaska and doing like 45-day expedition trips with at-risk youth, Alaskan youth up there. And that also brought me to therapy as well, because it was like, I was very attracted, of course, with my undergrad in psychology to apply these things, but I wasn't a therapist yet. So I was a wilderness guide for a while. I did work in residential treatment centers as, you know, like a psych tech, things like that, to help build this experience before I was a therapist, which actually was a lot of crisis management, was a lot of learning how to co-regulate nervous systems, was learning how to manage this very intense crisis state, kind of like what we were talking about, is like, how can we create these challenges? And nature really did it for us, right? When we're paddling out in Alaska for 45 days, nature does create the challenge. And it's like, okay, how can we work through this and move through this and create reparative experiences, whether in relationships or with ourselves, because we have more self-worth, that we can carry this canoe or we can paddle further than we thought we could. And there is just a lot of process that leads you to where you are now.
Right.
And, you know, I look back on it and think of how poetic it feels sometimes. And I look back and, you know, kind of confirm that I was in a really depressed place. I needed a realignment in my life. And that was part of what led me to being a therapist, was that knowing and leaning into the hard thing, looking at it and really choosing different. Because I could have just, okay, marketing's already where I'm going, and I just,
right,
you know,
and
it just wasn't right for me. So
yeah, wow, what a cool experience that you've had. Wilderness programs are big here in Utah. Like, we've got like so many. And for those who are listening, wilderness program is like one of the most, speaking of experiential therapy, it's like, it's a big experience. Mm-hmm. It is wild. It's like, typically it's a bunch of boys. At least the ones I've been involved with, a bunch of boys.
Yeah. I've had all genders and sexes. Yep.
Yeah. We sent them out in the wilderness with like almost like nothing. And it is so,
I hope you know that it's safe and ethical.
It is safe and ethical, but it is so gnarly, like so hard and awesome. That's so cool. I could imagine wilderness programs in Alaska would be pretty rad. We like go to the desert where it's like 1,000 degrees and that there's like no trees. But that's awesome.
Yeah. It's actually a really, beautiful experience to have worked with Native youth up there and to feel some of that repair in some ways of like, I'm here to serve you. I'm so sorry. And also at the same time to reintroduce them to some of the culture that has been lost as well.
Totally.
Just in the sense of canoeing in the same places that some of their, you know, lineage really did in a long way. And just a lot of the times, you know, I think as therapists, I think it needs to be at least known that the people and the clients and the students teach us just as much, you know, that there's a process of watching a kid take a bone they found in the woods and making a hook out of it and then catching a fish with it. Like that is just, that teaches me just as much as whatever therapeutic intervention I could have offered. There's such a mutual molding, I think, of your process of becoming a therapist is doing so much of your own personal work. I've heard before, and it really makes a lot of sense to me, that you can only take others as far as you have gone. And it feels really important, you know, for my graduate program, they required me to do at least 30 hours of my own personal therapy, which I think is like, of course, you know, like if you know, it just feels like, for me, and there's so many different styles of therapy, right? But for me, holding a container for people, I need to be able to set out my own biases. I need to be able to recognize when my dynamics are getting into the room more and projecting, because I'm a human too.
Totally. You know?
And I think that there's a lot of personal work that comes through context like wilderness therapy, that I'm in that same environment testing my own strength mentally, emotionally, physically. You know, I'm responsible for 9 children out in the wilderness with one other person that's my age and has my skill sets. You know, it's like there's a lot of personal work that goes into preparation to hold people in these spaces safely. So anyway, that's some of my story, I suppose.
Well I love that story. I think we need like another podcast, I feel like, because there's so many questions that keep coming to my mind. I'm like, ooh, if I crack that open, we're going to be here like all day. We just need to start, you know, I've always wanted to do like the long form podcasts, cause I think they're so good. Like they just work right. You know, I think We've seen a lot of good examples of that. Like, Joe Rogan goes for 3 hours and some of these other guys, and it's like,
I've watched some of Paul Stamets on Joe Rogan. I've watched that probably like three times, which is, I
yeah.
think he has like a 2 or 3 hour podcast, but I learned so much. And it is so, I mean, I'm just going to nerd out about Paul Stamets for a second. Just saying, like, that man knows so much stuff that it is a shame almost to
Yeah.
stop it after a little bit. So I'm thankful for some of those. Not to say that I'm anywhere close to Paul Stamets, but it's true. We both have a wealth of knowledge, and I enjoy talking to you. So
Yeah.
if there's a want for that out in the world, I'd be happy to come back for
Yeah, I think we should
that.
do it again. I don't know much about the psychedelic assisted therapies. I know some. I've listened a little bit, but I'd be curious to pick your brain a little on that, and maybe that'll be a future topic. So if you're listening to this and you want to hear that, send me a message on Instagram and let me know that that's a thing. So, well, Morgan, thank you so much for joining me. It's been
You're
incredibly
welcome.
fun. I understand that you have an online course for people who might be more interested in the things that we're talking about today. What does that look like, and where can they find you?
Well, they can find me. My business name is Mind's Eye Guidance. You can find me on Instagram. I'll probably be around on your profile, and there'll be
Yeah.
links, I'm sure. But it's MINDPSY. There's a pun in there. Guidance. And just some of the things that it includes is that more holistic framework. It's something that I really want all of my clients to go through because it is their own experiential process that I help lead them through on a daily basis. It's a 4-week program, but you get the curriculum for a lifetime. So it's something that's really just teaching you a daily practice to help regulate your nervous system. It's got journal prompts, meditations, the whole nine yards of, curriculum that helps you learn about these different holistic aspects throughout your life. And it actually goes through, I do my very best to make it not woo-woo, but it does use a westernized lens of the chakra framework on a daily basis. So, Mondays we dedicate our present attention to our bodies. That's our root. And Tuesday we go up to our sacral. What does our creativity and sensuality and emotions feel like? And this framework goes up through the whole, at least main seven chakras, to where we're even involving a spiritual element to that. And that's so different for everyone. What is that? What is that greater power to you, right? And that oftentimes doesn't get involved in the therapy conversation, right? We only get 1 hour once a week with our therapist. And so this is something that can be supplemental too. If you're already doing therapy, it's something that's really helpful to continue to do that work outside of the therapy office. And it's something that, it is technically a coaching, it's not therapy, but I do offer group sessions within that. There's bundles that you can get, and you can do group therapy sessions, or sorry, coaching sessions with other people that are within the course. And then you can also do one-on-ones with me as well. So there's lots of options, and I've been finding a lot of the, as a therapist, I've been finding a lot of the shortcomings in westernized psychological paradigms, and it feels like this is my attempt to help fill some of those holes in a more holistic way that people can apply into their daily life and make it sustainable for them. So, yep, that's kind of a little bit of what they can do, and I'm excited to connect with anyone that feels called to that.
Well, it sounds like a really useful resource and something that people should check out. Well, Morgan, again, thank you so much for joining me, and yeah, we'll probably have to do this again.
Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of The Art of Healing. This show is not therapy. It is not a substitute for therapy. If you'd like access to the Connection Course, please see the show notes in this podcast for the link to the Connection Course. Thank you and have a wonderful day.